Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Hi, thanks for joining the Global Marketing Show podcast. Today, we've got a really interesting person. But before we get into that, I want you to tell me what baseball, shipping, and leadership all have in common. Well, you're going to learn because today we have Trent Clark here today who has founded multiple businesses. He's a three-time Major League Baseball World Series coach. He has the rings to prove it, and he's an all-around great guy. I have enjoyed getting to know him so much. So welcome, Trent.
Wow, thanks, Wendy. Thanks for having me. Super excited about sitting down with you today. Thanks.
Yeah. So you are the answer to the question of what does baseball, shipping, and leadership have to do together?
Yeah, right. I think, if you could put all those together in one sentence, it'd be like, oh, it's that guy, right?
That guy.
Right.
Yeah. And as I was reading your profile about different things, I was exhausted just looking at it. You've got 5 kids, you've done business on 4 continents, you've started 11 companies, you're an active volunteer, and you're really active in your church too. So where do you get the energy? What's the secret sauce?
Yeah, I work out a lot, right? Like I don't drink. So yeah, I save that cost, and I also save, you know, that extra time of recovery, right? So you know, I don't know. We are busy and we are goers and doers. And I like it that way. I mean, and I got into that mode probably at a young age, always playing and doing all that thing. And I just don't think I know how to do it the other way, right? Where you just stop. And I think that's probably my knock. You know, your strength can also be your weakness, right? Where it's like, hey, do you ever just sit and relax? And I'm like, well, let's go do something. I was like, hey, let's just sit at the cabin and just look out, you know? And I'm like, 10 minutes. All right, that's what I got for that. Right? Awesome.
Okay, but it's also always very productive work too then.
Well, I hope so. You know, certainly trying to make a difference. I think that's the kind of key thing for me is I've been given a lot. I've been really blessed. And so I want to give back. And so the opportunity to do that certainly presents itself sometimes. And so I'm thankful I get to do that. Hey, I think I have another answer, by the way, to your question.
Oh, yeah? What's that? What's
George Steinbrenner. George Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees, a pretty good leader, and owned the Yankees for a long time. He started in shipping. That was his family business. Yes. Yeah, so I thought, like, hey, you know what? They're not gonna say Trent Clark. They're gonna say George Steinbrenner.
George Steinbrenner. Yeah. Well, you'll always be the person I know for baseball.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Yeah, who's that George Steinbrenner guy anyway? You know that guy.
Well, I gotta know. Did you put the ship in leadershipity because of your shipping?
So leadership, right? And everyone thinks about that. Maybe I should have highlighted the ship, right? Because of my background in shipping oil and transportation and all sorts of things. But we do really focus on the itty, right? Like all those things that we want in leadership, right? We want accountability. We want integrity. We want diversity. We want unity. We want all these things in our leadership. And of course, as leaders, you know, we're good at some of those things and like everything. We're not good at everything. So sometimes we miss on some of those. But, you know, for us as employers, and we want our leaders to have all those things, right? Like, you'll be good at all of them, right? And they're like, well, I'll try. That's good, right? They will.
So what are you best at? You've got accountability, diversity. What were some of the other itties?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's so many, right? Accountability, responsibility. We talked about unity, diversity. But on the bottom of my email signature is a ton of them too. Because I always like to ask people like, hey, what's that most important one to you? Right? Like what really comes off as a, a super important, if I had something I could do, or if I had one thing that I'd really want from people, is it clarity? Is it humility? Is it dependability? Is it adaptability right now? Is it, you know, in our firm, we want creativity. Oh, you know, my firm, we're about productivity. And, you know, then you get the groups that are like, you know what? We're generosity. We give back all the time. And then you've got the integrity. It's like we're everything we say we do. I love accountability. I feel like it's a four-letter word now, right? But I love it. Like, and I feel like, you know, there was so much growing up as an athlete. Like, you know, you were, I tell a lot of parents who ask me, who want their, you know, children to be, you know, superstar athletes and play in pro sports and all that. You know, first of all, I tell them careful what they wish for. You know, second, you know, that accountability, I tell them to get their children an individual sport at a pretty young age. Can they do wrestling or gymnastics or swimming often? Even though you play on a team, it's an individual sport a lot of times. Track and field and running, you know, like we're tennis, right? Like you just have these sports where I love team sports. I'm a team sport person, but probably a lot of my lessons in learning and leadership and that accountability and self-discipline came from individual sports because, you know, we got that aspect where, if we lost in football, but I scored 3 touchdowns, you know, I kind of did my job, but you know, hey, it's the defense or it's this, or we can blame or make excuse. Well, in the individual sports, it's like, oh, I lost 6-1, 6-1. And, that's, somebody else's, well, I don't know who else to blame except me because I'm the only one out there. Right. So
if you start them young in an individual sport, they learn ownership of winning and losing.
Exactly. Responsibility. Why did I win? Because I did the practice. I did the work. I was accountable to what the coach asked me to do. You really start working on those itties, right? That dependability and that humility, right? When you win, learn how to win with poise and humility, and also how to lose with sportsmanship. Like, hey, I tried hard, but I wasn't the best today. And boy, when I think about like wrestling, like what a hard one, right? Because like physically you kind of get beat up, right? Like, oh, I got pinned in 12 seconds. Like, wow. Like I was not good today. Right? Like that happened fast, or that person was really well prepared and really, and now it's learning like, boy, I wasn't great, but I wonder what he's doing because he was great today. And maybe I need to train like him, or you know, how prepared he was to be ready to go and all those things. So I think there's just a lot of learnings and self-responsibility from those individual sports, even though you still can play, you know, tennis on a team and you can swim on a team and run track with the team and it all counts. You know, as a track person, you know, you're just, it's you and the clock, right? Like I don't get to have any competitors actually, because really at the end of the day, it's how well did I do against it? And boy, when you talk about preparation and all that, like, boy, there's nowhere else to turn for excuse. I'll tell you, it always comes back to me.
So it's really interesting. We, my mom did a Fulbright scholarship. I'm staying on topic here, even though it seems like a veering very far. And she worked with a graduate student over there that came over here to visit us. And we loved touring him around. But something that was really weird for him was to go to my son's baseball game. I mean, he's looking at the big baseball diamonds. There are 4 of them, you know, right in that area in town. Yeah. All the families that are out watching their kids. And he's saying, in China, we don't do this. You know, you've got your one child and they're in school from like 9 to 5. And then they got homework from 5 to 11. And so the whole sporting concept of the importance. And you do leadership training around the world. So I'm kind of curious about, you know, where we can take sports and use it into an analogy in the U.S. for leadership. What do you see globally with the differences there?
Yeah, there are cultural differences, right? And we really have to consider those things. What probably one of the universal ones is music, right? So I love to use the orchestra analogy for leadership, right? We're going to come all together and the orchestra is going to play. And Wendy, I expect you to be so good with your instrument. You know, like if you're a flute player or you're a drummer or you're in percussion, you know, like I expect you to be great, but you also have to follow, right? We only make great music if we do together. Sometimes there's that solo and Wendy's so good, we're going to give her a solo in the next show and you have that part. But the majority is working with everybody else, because if we all just say, hey, I'll play my instrument, Wendy, you play yours and Tom will play his and Diane will play his and Ying will play his and we all just go across, this is going to sound awful, right? Like there's no unity. There's no togetherness. There's no, and we really have to follow that conductor. And so all of a sudden that leadership becomes, hey, how does that conductor lead everybody in and bring everybody along? And everyone knows their role and how to do their job. So this music is so beautiful and so well played. And so I think music's kind of an international bridge for a lot of things, but you really do have to find out what's important to your culture. You know, fortunately for me, I go to the East and, you know, Japan loves baseball. So try to go to those places. Everyone, I don't think I've ever been on a continent where there really wasn't a sport. And really worldwide, probably the most sport I talk about, of course, is football or soccer. Right?
Soccer. I was going to say, which football? I don't think
it's football. It's not our football, right? It's football. It's football.
Okay.
And they are worldwide. I mean, it's just, it seems like it feels like every country, it's still important. You know, it's on their stage. And if there's a sport, soccer is always kind of a top three, even in some of the, you know, third world. I mean, it doesn't cost a lot.
Yeah.
Been down to Ecuador. Wow. They love their team. They're very nationalistic about the Ecuadorian team. And I was down there the year of the World Cup in Brazil, and they were in, right? So, I mean, it was just amazing to see the national pride behind the team. A lot of fun.
So what was your first exposure to another culture or country?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, so I think my first exposure was Canada, of course. Like, I'm a Michigan kid. And so that first exposure for me was all about hockey and playing sports across the border and going into another country where I can remember, like, we would go there in vans and, you know, they would take all the kids and search our car. They would search our vehicle like, oh, these kids are coming to play hockey. Like, we're like 12, right? And you know, it was very interesting. The you gotta go out and about, eh? And you know, and everyone, wow, they don't really talk like I talk, right? And so it was fun, and we went into the French Canada and listened to, you know, a very different language. And I can remember my first time in Montreal, where I really felt like this is really different than North America. Right, like, you don't drive down the street and see, hey, you're heading south, it's sewer, right? Like, I mean, everything is in French. You don't have anything, so you're kind of going, I should have listened in class more. I don't know how I'm gonna eat, right? Like, so can I order that? And you start pointing to pictures, right? So you know, that's part of that. What I love about that for kids is, like, adaptability. You're learning right now, hey, how do I adapt in that culture? And families help you, and it's a fun experience. I mean, to get out there and travel, and I think that's what's so cool about the world, is like, the world has just shrunk. It's become so much smaller now. Even though it's such a big place, it's I mean, where can't we go on a plane in 24 hours, right?
Yeah. Like,
you're in a whole nother world. It's incredible.
It really is. So baseball took you to a lot of places international too.
Yeah, it really did. And yeah, I mean, even as soon as I got into playing and collegiately and things like that, I can remember playing in Mexico. And I thought this was probably my greatest, it's one of the greatest things I ever received from sport, is that fortunately I was pretty decent. And I got to see a lot of the world on someone else's dime, because you and I know how expensive it can be to, like, hey, let's just go to the south of France for 2 weeks, right? And like,
especially when you have five kids.
right. Like, I'm like, hey, kids, you better get good at something. It's so true. It's so true. It's not cheap to see the world, but it is so invigorating. It's so educational. And I tell you, from being an American, I really, you have a whole new appreciation for our country. And for when I hear people get down on America, and we're going through some tough times right now, and I really appreciate that. We have a lot of different opinions, but I tell anybody, hey, thicken up your passport. You know, this is still the place in the world that, you know, everyone will say, hey, listen, we will sacrifice a lot. All, you know, as you know, many immigrants have sacrificed every personal asset they own to leave it behind and come for the opportunity here. Yeah. Like, you know, you don't hear about that. Like, oh, you know, have you ever heard of an American going, I'm defecting to Poland? Like, I don't
for the opportunity. Right.
Yeah, right. Like, what? Like, I don't hear that, but yeah. Everywhere in the world I hear that. So for Americans, I'm like, wow, if you're a little down on it, you know, I really encourage you to thicken up your passport and find out, because people will give up and sacrifice a great deal to have this opportunity that we provide. And we're blessed, and it's hard to even encompass how great that blessing is. Being here every day.
I had a heel on a boot that had to get fixed. And so I took it over yesterday to the cobbler in the town over. And he was very proud of his story. He moved here 25 years ago and bought a cobbler store. He had had years, 4 or 5 years of experience in Russia. And now he's been there. He's part of the community. He knows everybody. And so he's lived that American dream. And it's out there for people to capture.
It is. And I love that. Yeah. I love that what you just said right there. Like he engulfed in the community, and he knows a part, and he knows people in the community. And more importantly to me is that they know him.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is the real value of community. And I can remember everyone saying, oh, pro baseball, boy, it's all who you know. And I'm like, well, it's really who knows you. Do they know you? To be like, I know Wendy Peace as a person of integrity who does great work on this international market, and she's all this translation work. And this is the person you need to call. And when you have people telling others about you, I know this person. So they go, wow, I want to know Wendy Peace because of what Trent said. like now people know you. Like if I said, hey, you should call Wendy Peace. Oh, well, who's that? I don't know. Like, they don't know you yet, but once they get to know you and they find out that you have all those itties, dependability, responsibility, you take all those things so serious in your business and all your people and your organization, they find that and they go, wow, I'm so glad that I know Wendy Peace. And instantly, they want to tell others about you.
Which is so interesting, because in the United States, we're known as very time and efficiency oriented. And so we can jump on a call and get right into business and not worry about building the relationship. Yet that relationship is what is going to drive your success.
Sure.
So do you see a difference of that with your work in the United States versus, you know, the kinds of relationships you've built internationally?
Yeah, I am super fortunate to have these great relationships worldwide. And one of those reasons is because I'm a member of the Entrepreneur Organization. Last year, there was 13,000 members in that organization worldwide. I can get on my phone app and walk in, you know, land in Oslo, and I can look up 10 members I could give a call to right now. They'd come down to my hotel and grab dinner. I'd learn everything about the country, like, and you know, in a couple hours, and it might cost me $100 to buy a dinner. You know, it'd be great. It'd be the best.
So tell me
about relationship, though.
Tell me about some of the people that you've met. I want to hear the stories. Who made a real impression on you?
I've had so many good impressions. You know, I've had people just, you know, they've shuttled me around the world. I've never, you know, I travel alone often, but I never feel alone, because these people come into my life and they say, oh, you know, this is our event and we're so glad you're here to speak, and let us show you everything. You know, they want to show off their country. And it's what you said again, though. Right now we're right into building relationships by phone and the setup and the Zoom calls before we ever get there. And just like you and I, like before we ever actually get to the meeting, we're already friends, right? Like we have a relationship. We've got to know one another's. We know we have families. We have different things in our lives, right? And so it's so pertinent. I last year I was I spoke in Guatemala City. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, in America, that is right now warning. Like, hey, this country's been on the warning. They've now come off that dangerous country, you know, the red label for their international travel. They've come off that because they've worked really diligently with our government to shore some things up. And it's great. And it's just the most beautiful country. And the entrepreneur member there was just an absolute, like, treasure. It was just, I saw the country like I'd never seen and I would never get. Like, I really kind of saw all the best things probably, right? Because it's pride and, you know, we want to see that. But just
I've heard the countryside is beautiful there.
It's just unbelievable. And he actually lived in the countryside. So, I mean, we would walk out and have coffee in the morning at his home and you're looking over these massive valleys and just seeing all the industry, right? Like bananas, coffee, all these things are going on in these beautiful, rich fields. And I'm like, wow. we have the Colorado Rockies in America. We don't have this kind of look, you know, to these mountainside that's just being producing all these products. It's incredible. And so I've just been so fortunate. It's been awesome.
So everybody has some fears about doing international work. Think about that for a minute and what fears you might have had or you had to confront.
Yeah, I really had to confront, you know, my first time in the Dominican Republic in baseball, right? It's professional baseball. This is probably my first third world country, right? Like, I don't know what that means, right? I don't know what third world means, but this is what it means. Like, it's third world. And, you know, I land in Santo Domingo and it could look like any city in America, right? Like, there's tall buildings, you've got an airport. And I'm like, well, you know, drive 10 miles out of town, things are getting very different, right? Like, it is, you know, metal sidings, you know, put up against each other, grass hut tops, you know, 4 to 6 people living in a 12 by 10 foot space, dirt floors. I mean, wow. You know, you really recognize that it's different, right? But you know what I love about humanity is not unhappy. Not feeling like, hey, you know, I'm envious because I don't have something, you know, blessed and still for the things that they have been given. And there's still a foundation there that I just love. And I think, you know, the people are smiling and they're fun and they're just living it up and they're living life. And it's amazing. But I tell you, my first time, I was scared, like, not that good at Spanish. Again, really should have listened in school. And, you know, I'm learning and I'm good enough to order food. I'm good enough to get my driver lost, you know. It was, you know, again, I was a little sheltered. Like, I had some people guiding me. So that was really advantageous. But I can remember I was about, well, let's see here. It was not long. It was a really big paradigm shift for me traveling internationally when I was down in South America, and it was about 2003, 2004. And I was talking with a small group and these really high-powered women in this community, just business owners, and they were really sharp and really well-educated. And one person in the group hadn't traveled a lot as many of the others. And she said, oh, America, so dangerous. I saw those planes go into the buildings. I would never go to New York. And I was like, ooh, wow. Like, what a shift in paradigm. Like, I'm worried about your country. There's a lot of drugs in your country. Like, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not coming down here for coke, so I don't know. You know, like, but I'm like nervous about, like, all the things you hear about, you know, drug cartel in South America, and scared, and, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, hey, she's scared of America, gun control, you know, planes going in the buildings. This is what's going on there. Why would I ever visit there? That's dangerous. And I realized, boy, we all have fears, right? We all get scared. And so that really gave me a paradigm shift that, wow, you know, we really do see things and we don't really know what the truth is, but it's easy to understand that and be fearful of things that we don't know. And I think that's part of the international, is that it's what we don't know. We feel a lot better about what we know. And there's so, and I think it's probably what really helped me in travel was in sports. You gotta get pretty good at being uncomfortable. And I've never gone and explored in a country, and I've had a couple incidences were a little shaky, but I've never looked back and gone, I'm so sorry that we went and did that in you know, Indonesia. Or like it was an experience. And even if it
didn't wait. Those shaky experiences, you got to come up with one and give me an example.
Yeah. This is what I'm trying to pull out. I've had a couple moments, right, where I was like,
oh, tell me about one.
I don't really know where I'm at, right? And so, yeah, it's been, I was in the East. I was in, and you know, Singapore, right? Like, this is one of the most safest countries in the world. And you know, I felt like I was a lawbreaker because I think I trafficked gum into the country, right? Like, so I didn't chew it while I was there. So I just want to go on saying, you know, I was legal. Okay. But
Listeners who don't know that it's illegal to chew gum in Singapore, and their consequences are pretty severe. So
very severe.
You brought it in, you smuggled it in, but you didn't chew it.
But
you You're not that risky.
Didn't sell it. I wasn't selling Wrigley's.
Selling it. Okay. It was just in your pocket for going home. Yes. Huh?
Yeah. I just had it in my bag. So, so that's it. And they're very serious. It's a very clean country. But, you know, language barrier, their English is still strong. But workout guy, like I said. And one evening I went out right after dinner and went for a run. Mm-hmm. And, I'm following my GPS, and I'm kind of mapped out, and I messed up and I got lost. And now I my signal's no longer on my phone. And I'm like, ooh, no idea where I'm at. I'm in workout gear. I'm sweaty. It's dark now. And I can't hail a cab. Didn't bring a wallet. And this is now this is like pre-Google Pay, you know, Apple Pay, any kind of electronic digital swipe. So I don't have a credit card. I don't have cash. I don't have their money for sure. And I'm like, oh, man. you realize all of a sudden, like, this is not great. And so I'm starting, and I'm moving through looking. And so what I did was I looked for lights. Right. I start looking for the cloud thinking, hey, where's a shopping mall? Where's something like that where I could go to a grocery store? So I'm jogging and it's dark and I'm thinking like, oh, and about, you know, a mile and a half, I see like, I got to go there because I see like the sky's lit. There's gotta be something going on there. And the first one I went to, it was like a sale thing and they had the lights going in the sky. It was nothing. It was one store. And I was like, oh no, like, I'm thinking I went away from my hotel, right? I'm like, oh, so I see it, you know, I take off again and I see another area.
How long have you been running at this point?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was already out like, you know, an hour and 15 minutes when I realized I'm in the wrong spot. That's when I catch myself like, I should have been back. I should have been back. Okay. Right now I realize like, oh, wait a minute, where am I at? What? And so, you know, so I see these lights and so I go and fortunately for me, it was kind of a mall, but there's a grocery store and I go into the grocery store and they're like, and someone can speak English. So I'm like, hey, how would I get to the Marriott? Right? Like, how would I do that? And this woman was so nice. Like she called a cab for me and she told the cab in her language, like that I would pay at the hotel. Like I would pay there because he doesn't have his money, but he has money at the hotel. So, so that's how I did it. But, you know, and I was really thankful that I was in Singapore, right? Because, you know, kind of coming back to our country, same kind of situation. I was in New Orleans speaking and I got caught. I was trying to get back to Chicago. It was like December and December, you know, big Chicago storm and they shut all the airports down. Well, so all of a sudden it's every day, like 2-3 days in a row, I'm like, all airports closed, call tomorrow, American Airlines. I'm like, wow. So I'm like, can I stay another night at the Marriott? So I go out and I go out really early in the morning because I called for the flight. It's like, you know, 5 in the morning and I have no chance. So I'm like, well, I'm up. I'm going to go running. So I go running out through the French Quarter and it's on a Friday morning. I'm trying to get home, but not going to get home this day. So I take off for the run and I start off the streets at the French Quarter, right?
Yeah.
And so the day comes out, and I get back to the hotel. I'm having breakfast. And the USA Today is the weekend edition, and I read this, and it's like, New Orleans, murder capital. People are getting picked off these streets right off the French Quarter. I'm like, wait, where I went running today? It's like, oh my goodness. Like, I'm glad it wasn't 10 at night. Like, I'm just thinking, yes. Like, oh my goodness. Like, I don't know. You don't know where you're at. You know, and you're thinking like, hey, it feels pretty safe. And we've been in a lot of neighborhoods, where, hey, it's great here, but two blocks.
Yeah.
It gets not great fast.
Well, that's right? Down in the French Quarter. You're on Bourbon Street or the couple, but you don't go a couple off there. That was 10 midnight. Ooh, yeah. It's danger. Yeah.
Yep. That was a learning experience that I was fortunate that, hey, I was daylight. Well, sort of. It was morning, but, you know, who's moving at 5:30 in the morning around, right? So, like, fortunately for me, it was okay. But, lesson learned. So there's, a couple things out there in the world that get a little scares, but usually turns out all right.
Yeah. So you talked about back at the Dominican Republic when you got there and you're driving in and you're looking at these, lean-to metal towns and realizing that you don't speak the language. Talk to me about how you've dealt with language on your international travels.
Yeah, I mean, so before there was Google Translator, right? Before that, we've had, it was tough. It was very important on the setup of how you did things. And so oftentimes I was very coordinated about who was going to be picking me up at what time. And I always kind of had a driver that could navigate enough language with me and where we had to go. Now, the other side of this is that we always have people, on the ground who are, usually U.S. educated and running their company, in another country. So their English is very good. So I've always been very thoughtful and prepared in having someone with me. And so I never felt too bad, but I also love to go. I took my driver like in the Dominican and I was like, hey, it's so great to me. I want to take you to lunch and buy you whatever you want. And he was like, oh, really? And he said, I'm like, whatever, like, let's go. And he's like, McDonald's. And I'm like, really? And he was like, I want McDonald's, and you're thinking like in a third world country, like McDonald's, like, hey, a $5 double quarter pounder is like, that's like this isn't like a quick fast meal here. This is kind of nice meal there. Right. Yeah. And I was so impressed with McDonald's because, you go into, San Pedro, Dominican Republic, and I got the exact quarter pounder with cheese I get in, Grand Rapids or Chicago or Austin, wherever I'm at. So it was great. And he was so thankful. Like, I was like, yeah, all right, it cost me like $21.
I had the same experience in China when we went over to visit my mom's graduate student, where you've never had McDonald's. So we took him into McDonald's and let him get whatever he wanted.
Yeah. Isn't that good? So I'll tell you my Chinese story on language that was a real struggle. Like our family, just to add to the chaos, right? We had a Chinese student from just outside of Beijing stay with us while he was going to high school a few years back. So we had this international student and helped him and really, really enjoyed it. A lot of fun. And so I went to speak in Shanghai and his father had some business in Shanghai and came to meet me. I hadn't met his parents before. He came to the country and his parents didn't come. And so he gets settled in. The kid's great. I love the kid. And so his dad's going to meet me for dinner. His dad does not speak like four words of English.
Yeah.
And I speak four words of Chinese, right? So we pick out this restaurant and my whole search for the restaurant was, you have good Wi-Fi, right? So like I get there, I get on my phone and we go to Google Translator and we talk all night into our phones and it does the translator.
That's fantastic. That is a really good use for the Google Translator, because there's, you've got no liability. It doesn't have to be exactly perfect, but it can facilitate the conversation. Yeah.
Two and a half hour dinner, you know.
Did
like
you really?
Yeah. I just had a ball and got to know him, and then he came over for his son's graduation. We took him out, and his English had been like majorly improved. I don't know if he started using Google Translator to learn, because he went from 4 to like 400 words, like, I mean, significant, right? In just a few years. Now, part of that might be because his son comes back every summer from America going, hey, Dad, he's better. I better learn what he's saying. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But he was really much improved. And
I've been surprised at the number of people internationally who have learned English by watching American TV, Hollywood movies.
Well, yeah. And the American players would do the same thing. They would go to Mexico or Dominican or Venezuela for the winter leagues, and that's how they would learn Spanish. They'd watch the Spanish TV. That's exactly how. And the players would help them too and laugh at them a lot. And so it was. It just feels. It's so funny as a language. Every language feels fast. When you're in their country, like, wow, does everybody talk this fast? Like, and I'm thinking, wow, people have to keep up with my English, right? And they're going, oh my gosh, it's rapid fire. I'm never going to understand this English. So
So do you change your speaking when you're talking to people who aren't
So I do really have to consider the fact, like, the big thing when I speak internationally is there's translators. Right.
Oh, well, they would be interpreters because they're helping with spoken language.
They're
translators,
right?
Written, interpreter spoken. Yep. Yeah.
So we have an interpreter who comes up on the stage, you know, either side to me, you know, and then they go, hey, do you want Spanish, Japanese, Chinese? And then, so now I'm like, I really have to think about slowing down. And I'm like, and that is not my MO. I'm like, let's go. You know, I'm so energetic and passionate that it's
so we give advice to speakers when they're going to speak with interpreters on how to be successful. So have you learned or what have you trained, you know, are people given suggestions for you?
Yes, so they've given me my advices have been long pauses. Make sure I got good pauses. Try not to like break the information down into, you know, very small parts, very digestible parts, and take breaks, take more breaks. So we usually don't go into, in the international environment, we usually go 45 to 50 minutes on and take the break. Where in America, I'm typically going 2 hours, 2:15 or something like that, 1:45 to 2:15. Before a break. So if we do like a half day session, we may only do one break, maybe two, and there it's on the hour. Like we get very thoughtful to get people a break, get the headsets off, you know, and also being able to be interactive, I think is really important. I have a lot of work. I want people to dig into the information and leave with something tangible in their hand that says, hey, I'm going to change some things about the way. And now I've got a little bit of a playbook on how I might do that. So I like to give some exercises. So, you know, as long as we're prepared, you know, we have that, the worksheets in Japanese and Chinese and Spanish, and we're prepared for it, which I think is really more engaging. And I think we have to be thoughtful to that. I also think there's a really good way when you're speaking internationally to get folks together speaking in a tongue they understand, that they're clearly you know, serviceable. I don't want to say fluent, but serviceable, right? And they can sit at a table and do some interactive work too, where they talk to people from different countries, different backgrounds, even different areas of the country, right? Because when you look at China and America, these countries are gigantic. So you have very different pockets of cultures and dialects. So it's fun to get people in and intermingling. And I think it's back to what you said, Wendy. It's back to building relation. So I love it.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic to hear. And so you mentioned that you also get your worksheets translated so people can read them and really participate.
For sure.
I'm so happy to hear that. How did you go about getting them translated?
Well, originally I had like my VAs do it. I have virtual assistants out of the Philippines that work for me, and they do a lot of different work. You know, I kind of started as an executive assistant, but they are very thorough and well prepared. So they give me a lot of international, and they're great. Like, their international exposure is great because they represent and work for companies all over the world. So if I say, oh, hey, listen, I'm going to go into Norway with this event, and they go, oh, good, you know, we have two companies in Norway, and I'm going to walk down the hall and talk to our four assets that are supporting that, you know, a couple of Norwegian companies, and talk about the translation work that we might have to do there. And so it's like, oh, great. Like, that's awesome,
wow.
Right? And so we try to get that. And then I usually try to vet that with like the coordinator on site to see like, hey, native language, we got that right. And then if there's going to be other people, they typically either vet that themselves or they ship that off to their international contact if they have folk coming in from other countries and verify that it's aligned and looks good and right.
Okay, so your VA would search for somebody that would have a contact in the country, and then you'd send it off again to somebody in the country to review.
Yeah, so one of the hosts. Quality. Yeah, one of the hosts for the event like to vet that information in advance. Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's how you're doing the quality control.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel by any means. So, you know, and I try to keep it very simple. It's really thought-provoking, and let's get your ideas, you know, your answers to these things. So they're not typically long and detailed, and they also get to work alongside with me explaining it as, you know, a front man in that. So I found it to be very successful as far as just engagement and learning.
Yeah. Oh, we've heard of so many companies where they're the ones that translated the information and ended up winning the deal or having more success because even though the presentation was in English, they had translated all their forms. So I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. And then, so on your document management, like if you go back to a different organization in Norway, or if you have it translated into Spanish and go to another Spanish-speaking country, do you reuse them?
I will. I will. Yeah, I keep all of it, right? The nice thing about computers today, right? Like, have it all on file. But yeah, I will do it. But I'd still vet the same thing. Even if, if you did like, if you did like Venezuela and then I said like, oh, well, we're going to go to Puerto Rico. There's a significant different dialect there, right? And of course, if you went over to Madrid, very different. So someone would say like, hey, we need to change this. Make it, really Spanish, Spain Spanish, right? Because Dominican Spanish is very, it's not a highly educated country, right? So it's very slangy and everybody wants that. Usually if you're going by the book, in proper grammatic fashion, you know, kind of keeping it safe, right? I'm not saying, the King's English here when we talk about English language, but when you use your proper grammar, proper etiquette, from a more professional and, less slang, right? Like
more grammatically correct.
Grammatically correct. That's what I'm looking for, right?
Yeah.
You just kind of keep it to that and also keep it simple, not using words that extraneous and, always trying to, look more educated and forget that. Like, keep it, we're back to the KISS principle, right?
Yeah, keep it simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's true. And that's with Spanish, we see a lot. You can use a global Spanish that will do a good job with communicating. There are certain, like if it's a consumer, if it's a football for a certain country, you're going to have to localize. But Mexico, Puerto Rico, they're very anglicized, so they'd be different. If there's any Spanish in the United States, particularly on healthcare or government or stuff like that, you have to, there's a specific Spanish. But
yes,
you're right. If you use a good grammatically correct for leadership training, you probably can do one translation.
Yeah, and I don't mind. Like, I'm open to the fact, like, hey, we'd love to see this change to this. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, like, no problem for me. Like, and like you said, Panama, like, you get different countries and it's fine. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so exciting that you're doing it all over the place and working with interpreters and.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't know how easy it is for them. I don't get a lot of feedback from the interpreters, right? Like, the audience always gives feedback. I would like to have some feedback from the interpreters, like, hey, could you slow down? Did you use enough pauses? Did we have enough breaks? What was the temperature? And so by different cultures, I have seen where I'll have a lot of different countries represented. And they'll be like, let's say 250 people in the room and 10 countries. And like, two countries kind of rate you badly. like, oh, well, everyone had you at 9.5 average. And, you know, these two tables were kind of like 7. And I'm like, oh, which two countries? Like, oh, well, India. And I'm like, oh, because, you know, we're in Asia, but, you know, India's very different from some of the Chinese and the Japanese cultures, right? And so,
so you don't know if it was a cultural thing or whether it was a language through the interpreter.
Sure.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of challenges in it. So yeah, it could be like, oh, I got, well, yeah. What if that, what if I got marked because I had a bad interpreter? Like, I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know that. And so, but I've never received a feedback form and said, hey, here's the audience and here's the interpreters. Like, that would be really interesting to me. Because I think I could learn a lot from that.
Yes, you could. And the other way to do it is, we'll often suggest this to people who are going to use interpreters, is that before you start the conference, meet with the interpreters and pick up some hand signals. So every so often you look at them or check in with them at the break, which is hard because you have people from the audience coming up to talk to you, but allow that time to touch base with them so you can get the feedback live rather than at the end.
So
and
good.
Then,
yeah.
They can also be a cultural conduit where they give you suggestions on what might be appropriate or inappropriate, or the audience isn't getting because you're talking about pickleball and they don't know what it is.
Yeah, love pickleball. You know it.
I That's played so good. Pickleball for the first time last weekend. I loved it.
Did you? It's so good. It's so much fun. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I've been playing in the last few years, but I think that is a good, I think it's a really good point. I know that, you know, unintentionally, of course, I have said things in the past that have like, hey, by the way, you likely just offended 20% of the audience when you said, and I was like, ooh.
Do you remember what it was that you said?
No, not off the top of my head. Maybe because it's happened so often.
Or it hasn't happened very often, but.
I've been more cautious over the last few years.
Yeah.
But I can remember telling a story where I was saying something about, and I made a hand gesture to what happened, right? And they were like, whoa, that means something else here, right? You know, like.
Yeah, no thumbs up, no okay signals. If you watch politicians, their thumbs always tucked in, not like a fist, but, you know, it's tucked in for them to make the points. You got to be careful with.
So it's here, like it's that.
It's the fist with the thumb tucked in.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you ever watch politicians speak, it's kind of like they're hammering almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good safe hand gesture.
Yeah,
but, you know,
you don't say that. Number one. Yeah, I've been number one. Japan, I guess that means something very different. And I know I've been guilty of the hand gestures in the past.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to ask your interpreters too before you present. Is there any hand, you know, I tend to do number one. Is there anything offensive about that I should know? Or it's very interesting. Or where you touch people too. And you know,
it's so different, you know, like it's so different, like, and COVID's probably part to do, but, you know, it's so much changed, you know, cause American hugging is customary, right? Like it's very, like we're, you know, a warm people and we like contact and, you know, it's changing. Yeah. It's really changing. And it's tough. It's tough. Yeah. It's tough for a person like me because, you know, I don't like that change.
No, I don't either. I'm a hugger, and that I did not realize how much I would miss hugs.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. And now it's not only feels like kind of impersonal because we've lost our customary, hey, it's really nice to see you.
Yeah.
But now there's another level of like, well, I'm offended because you hugged me in the wrong way and your hands were here. Like, wait, what? Like, wow. You know, and it's like, man, it's so much. It just feels like, it feels really kind of ominous, right? And so it's hard. It's hard now.
Well, it's also, things I don't like. I mean, you've been to France before, right? And you did the French kiss. Not the French kiss, but the French greeting kiss.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Where it's one cheek-to-cheek kiss if you kind of know them. It's two if you know them better. And it's three if you really know them well.
Right. I know.
There's some subtlety you got to figure out there that I have yet to figure out. I'm always looking for the lead of how many times we're going to cheek kiss.
Are we going to keep going? Because like, you're coming back in for a third? Wait a minute. Do we know each other that well? Like, yeah, I know. It's cool though. It's cool that countries have their own customs, right? It's cool that they have their own thing. And you know, I think we have to lighten up a little bit and roll with it. Like, guess what? It's okay if you muck it up. You know, like you're an American. You know, you always like the language. I mean, the language, you've always heard the joke, right? The hey, if I speak three languages, I'm trilingual. If I speak two languages, I'm bilingual. If you speak one language, you're American.
It's
me, right? So
it's like, well, I just heard statistics. It's like most, like 2/3 of the other people in other countries are, you know, multilingual or bilingual. And here in the United States, it's like 1/4. I mean, it's dramatically different.
You know, this is where I get my humility. You know, if any time for a moment, I'm not a big dude, right? Like I'm like 5'6", 165 pounds, right? So, so I don't ever have to worry about like physically being this big presence. But whenever I feel like I'm getting a little too big for my britches, just get on a business class flight anywhere internationally. And I constantly feel instantly like I'm unintelligent and uneducated because I talk to people like, oh, well, you know, I'm from Holland, but I speak 7 languages.
And I can tell you more about your political system and history than I can.
Oh, listen, I go right there. Listen, every time I'm in Canada or anywhere international, I'm like, who should I vote for? You go, oh, well, let me tell you what Joe Biden stands for. Let me tell you, like, well, okay. It's educational for sure because they know so much more about our
system. They do. And that's Americans take such the bust on, you know, if an American comes to your country, they'll know nothing about who your leaders are or what your, you know, how you
function. I think that's something that, unfortunately, I think it is changing though. Because again, small world, like, you know, what does it really take you to spend an hour on Wikipedia and Google and find some things out? You're going to Kazakhstan. Like, why don't you find out a little bit of that history and find out about some things that are going on and the people? And, you know, it's interesting. And when you start, I mean, I know, like, when anytime I go near the mountains, like, I'm always like, hey, do you guys have Sherpas? Like, I want to know, like, anyone who lives up at that altitude and, you know, then like Peru, and, like, oh, I'm like fascinated, right? So, and it doesn't take much to learn. And I think people are remiss if you go into Ecuador and don't go to Mitad del Mundo. You're in the middle of the world. Like, this is where connect. And, you know, I have this great photo of my son. I took him down there on a mission trip and he was 10.
Fun.
So we're standing, you know, in the four corners, right? We are two different hemispheres, of course, right? And we're separating east and west, right? So we have like the four corners and we think we're so cool, right? Like, hey,
so cool. I need to go there. That's on my bucket list now. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny, like you talk about, like, I don't want to give the French a bad name, but there was these great, brilliant mathematicians who come in and they did it and they, you know, back in, you know, this is umpteen hundreds of years ago, right? And they do all these calculations to, well, it turns out like they're 26 feet off, right? And I'm like, the calculation was done like 1400 years ago. Like, are you serious?
With no computers, no calculators.
Yeah. They had a protractor, bro. Like, you know, like, and it's like, it's just like 26 feet. And they take heat. Like, they take heat. Like, well, you know, it's not exactly the middle of the oh my gosh. It's good. Like, I'm good with it. Like, I'm just going to go stay here with the monument.
I will still celebrate their spot because they did it so long ago. Yeah.
I think it's such a great word. We celebrate people. That's the international market. Like, celebration. Like, and they're celebrating, you know, what America stands for. And people really do appreciate that. And they do celebrate their cultures. And it's so cool. Why wouldn't we do that? And by the way, nothing builds relation better than celebration, right?
Right. Yeah.
So let's do more of that and smile more. Like, let's have more of that and less of what we have today, for sure.
Yeah. All right, then I'm going to switch us over to some personal stuff. I'm sure give us some smiles. All right, your favorite vacation?
Ooh, my favorite vacation. Good one. Wow. Is it for me or my family? Like place to go to, or what are we talking about?
Whatever, however you define favorite vacation. It could be a solo, it could be family. It's no offense to anybody. It was just a big memory.
Yeah. So family vacation for me is going to the mountains with the kids. Like, I think that's always been my number one, like, go into, you know, it's kind of God's country. Like, you see things, you know, we live in the Midwest, right? It's pretty flat. So the mountains and just the majesty of that. Right. And then as you get in there and you just realize, like, the world's different and the topography is different. And we're usually, you know, skiing or snowboarding. And so I like that. I spend, you know, I get on a chairlift with one of my kids for, you know, 10 minutes and just talk about stuff and world. And we get scared because, you know, you're 200 feet off the ground and places going, do not fall off.
Don't drop a pole. Don't drop a skier, a glove.
Fear. And I really like to go anywhere with my kids where we learn something new. And there's always stuff to learn, right? Yeah. So Vancouver for me is probably one of the most beautiful places in the world. You know, I tell everybody who will listen, and that's not that many to me, but
right.
Vancouver, it is, wow. I mean, you know, the Rockies meet the Pacific. It's just with Whistler there. I mean, within kind of a 110-mile radius, it's just unbelievable. Victoria Island.
To get there.
It is fabulous.
How about your most rewarding business cross-cultural experience?
For sure, professional baseball, right? Like, you go across, you know, when we talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, right? Like, this is, let's take 25 men from 10 different countries, multiple, you know, cultures, and we have a goal to come together as a team, work really well with this international game, and not only be kind of successful, but really be better than everybody else in the world, right? And so when you win that kind of, you know, that world championship, right? It's pretty incredible. And it's also a great learning experience and it takes some tolerance for other people, but it also, you know, you need some grace from other people too, because you're going to kind of muck it up. You're going to say things to people that may hurt their feelings and you don't know it. And so it's not easy. It's a thick skinned environment. And so it's really kind of special. But when it all comes together, you know, you realize that's where I think humanity really comes together. When it really all comes together, you realize that, like, what's important is your values, right? Mm-hmm. And what you need to be successful. And at the end of the day, purple, green, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter who your parents were. It doesn't matter, you know, what country you lived in. It doesn't matter what language you speak. It's really about the heart, right? And so it's pretty special when it all comes together. And it's hard. It's hard work. And I think that's what makes it more special, because, you know, we value the stuff we worked hard for. Like,
right.
You went and got your master's degree, did all this stuff, and you're like, man, raising a kid and can't get my master's to do this. But when you get it, hey.
You have just picked the two hardest things and most fulfilling things in my life.
Right?
Getting my MBA from Dartmouth and raising my kids. Hands down, hardest thing, most rewarding.
And earned, not given.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
given.
No.
You know, and I love that. I saw, you know, someone said that on a show I was watching. They said, you know, how about the rings? And he goes, and he's kind of given like answers. He goes, earned, not given.
Earned.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm like, you know, MBA from Dartmouth, that's earned. That's not given. You know, a world championship ring, that's earned.
It's earned.
Not given.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
yeah.
like, hey, why don't we go out this weekend? And by the end of the weekend, we should be the world pickleball champions. Like, no. Like, earned. You know, if you want that, hey, let's go for that. But like, that is going to be a multi-year process, right?
Yes.
And for
yes.
me, it's going to be another age category that hopefully I can stay, you know, I can be the world champion when I'm 60.
You know? Well, back in my 20s, I said I can either age 20 years and keep this time and be a winner, or I can drop 20 minutes off my triathlon time. Mm-hmm. I've got the age now, but I don't have the 20 minutes off the time.
Right? So. Yeah. It's a balance. It's a balance.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on today. It's been so refreshing talking to you. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Leadershipity. I'm on Twitter at the same. LinkedIn is probably my most popular. People find me on LinkedIn. I think, you know, I'm a relations guy and I like people to know a little background. A lot of people reach out to me through that.
Okay, always so happy. They can just Google or go to LinkedIn and look for Trent Clark, Leadershipity,
yep.
and they'll find you on
they
LinkedIn.
They will find me pretty there. Quick. There's fortunately, yeah. there's not a lot of Trent Clarks out there, which is really nice.
Oh,
obviously,
good.
Leadershipity.com is our website. So.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, I love learning. You know, you said it really well that throughout the world, there are a lot of differences, but we share so much. We share music, sports. We share celebrating, laughter, relationships, smiles, values, and coming from the heart. So,
family.
And family, right? The value of family. Yeah, so thank you so much for reminding us all on that. And thank you, listeners, for listening. If you learned something today or you had a laugh, tell somebody about the podcast. You can find it on all your favorite places to listen, and we'll talk to you next time.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.